From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, legalizing marijuana becomes a campaign pledge for a newly launched Democratic candidate for governor. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the importance of the Working Families Party in the next gubernatorial election, and we'll visit a town hall meeting recently held with 21st District Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Democratic candidate for governor Cynthia Nixon outlined her plans for legalizing marijuana in New York in a video, saying the state lags far behind some other states. Governor Cuomo says he's studying the issue. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Nixon, who is challenging Cuomo in a Democratic primary, says New York should follow the lead of eight other states and take a major step in ending what she calls the racist war on drugs.
I believe it's time for New York to follow the lead of eight other states and D.C. and legalize recreational marijuana.
Nixon says 80% of the New Yorkers arrested for marijuana are Black or Latino, despite the fact that whites and people of color use marijuana at roughly the same rates. She says the consequences of their encounters with the court system hinder chances for good jobs and housing and can even lead to deportation for undocumented immigrants. Nixon says if there was more political courage in Albany, the drug would already be legal.
The simple truth is, for white people, the use of marijuana has effectively been legal for a long time. Isn't it time we legalize it for everybody else?
Cuomo, after an event on Long Island, responded to the announcement. He denies that New York is behind other states.
No, I think we're actually ahead on it. We announced months ago that we were going to study the legalization issue precisely for that reason.
The governor had requested the marijuana legalization study as part of his state budget. It did not end up in the final spending plan, but Cuomo spokesman Rich Azzopardi says the state health department has the authority and the resources to do the review anyway. The study will look at the health impact, criminal justice effect, and consequences to New York resulting from legalization of the drug in surrounding states.
I'm trying to depoliticize the issue and say, let's get the facts. We now have states that have legalized marijuana. Let's look at the facts and the experience and see what happened there. And let's see what the consequences are if Massachusetts and Jersey, if we have two borders that have legalized marijuana, then what does it mean?
Cuomo, in an indirect criticism of Nixon's statements, says he wants to try to reach agreement on the issue between Democrats and Republicans in the legislature so that a bill could actually become a law.
The best way to forge consensus is on facts rather than opinions, stereotypes, past experiences.
New York already has a limited medical marijuana program. There's no timetable for when the New York legalization study might be completed. Meanwhile, other states are moving forward with their plans. The first retail marijuana stores are set to open in Massachusetts on July 1st. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week you spoke with Karen Scharf, co-chair of the Working Families Party. She's the executive director of Citizen Action. Citizen Action endorsed Cynthia Nixon for governor this week. You had a spirited discussion about that and whether or not she could actually win. But the issue of the Working Families Party came up, and this is a big issue.
You know, David, in the old days, there used to be something in New York State called the Liberal Party, which fell apart in real disrepute. Basically, that role has been replaced by the Working Families Party. Heavy labor union participation, a lot of progressives in the party who want to make a distinction between themselves and the Democrats, and it has been doing pretty well. It's not a big party. So what happens is that everybody gets a vote, but the labor unions put the money in. Labor unions are putting a huge amount of money in. The labor unions are for Andrew Cuomo, and many of the progressives in the party are not. They are for Nixon. The last time, Mayor de Blasio came on and saved Cuomo, and Cuomo got party's designation. If, in fact, the spirit of the working parties prevails, what I'm seeing right now, and Nixon gets the nomination, that risks, of course, a major third party opening up. Now, there are little parties, but they don't really count the way the Working Families Party works. And so, you know, the designation is very, very important in this case because it gives people a place to go if they don't like Cuomo. And there are people in the party who are telling me, really good sources, that the expectation would be that if Nixon lost the primary but had the Working Families designation, that she should give it up and get out. I doubt that that's going to happen. So we'll have to see whether or not the party and the people in the party who are intent on seeing Nixon get the nomination, that she gets it.
And how that affects the other side of the race going forward, the Republican side.
Well, I think that's what the Democrats are afraid of. And Andrew Cuomo clearly wants this Working Party's designation. I'm told he's wildly reaching out to everybody he possibly can to make sure that that happens. Long phone calls and other things. That's what we're hearing. And the argument is that if there's a third-party candidacy, and if there's an attractive Republican candidate like Mark Molinaro, that Molinaro could squeak through. I find that hard to believe in a Trump year in New York State. On the other hand, there is a lot of animus towards Cuomo, who's been trying to make up for that by moving as far left as fast as he possibly can. But put simply, an awful lot of people just don't trust him.
You also spoke with Karen Scharf about the New York State Senate with the mostly reunited Democrats, Simca Felder, and the elections coming up.
Well, don't get me started on Felder. the idea that one man could become so important in this case and insist on things like the students in Orthodox schools would not be held to the same learning standards or objectives that people in virtually every other educational institution are held to is a whole different thing from what we have seen. And in large part, he is getting his way. He's so important to everyone, meaning both parties. Felder aside, there are major elections. There are two elections for seats which have been vacated by Democrats. Democrats should win one of them easily, not the other one. That's going to be much more contested. If they win them both, they will probably have enough to go forward, and at least for now, whether or not Felder goes along with them means that he's got to figure out where he is and his constituents are best served.
Finally, the candidate, Cynthia Nixon, the race for governor, is now putting legalizing marijuana in front and center in her campaign. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it will raise a lot of revenue. I have to tell you, medical marijuana has taken off. People are using this stuff as a sleep aid to dull pain. The idea of legalizing marijuana is very much in fashion, and people are going to do it, and the state's going to do it. Nixon, of course, has a political approach to this. She wants to make sure that a lot of people who now face unfair prosecution. In other words, if you smoke marijuana on the 16th floor of a Fifth Avenue apartment, your risks are de minimis. Whereas if you smoke it on a street corner, you could be arrested, at least under the old rules. And the new rules, not so much anymore. But I do think that there are some groups in our sociology in this country who feel that they are more attacked for smoking marijuana than others. And from a political point of view, it's not a bad strategy on Nixon's part.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of New York's 21st District held a town hall meeting recently in northern Saratoga County. As the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports, the Republican seeking a third term tried to distinguish herself from her party.
The 21st District that covers much of northern New York is considered a prime target for Democrats in November's midterms. Before the election of Congresswoman Elise Stefanik in 2014, the district was represented by Democrat Bill Owens. In 2016, the district went for President Donald Trump. But as Stefanik seeks a third term against a pool of seven Democrats and at least one other Republican, as well as other third-party candidates, she spent some of her time with constituents Thursday distancing herself from the GOP. Stefanik, whose district includes the Adirondack Mountains, drew roaring applause after she called for the resignation of U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt. She said she fundamentally disagrees with how President Trump's pick to run the agency has handled his position as director of the EPA.
So I'm going to make some news here. Pruitt should resign.
Pruitt, who has worked to undo many of the environmental policies put in place by the Obama administration, has come under fire for a condo rental linked to an energy lobbyist. Stefanik also said she opposed funding cuts to the EPA and said she was concerned about Pruitt's decision to limit the scientific research used for the agency's decision-making. Stefanik, who is 33, has taken an environmental approach that her campaign says seeks, quote, a balance between stewardship and clean economic growth, end quote.
I think on environmental issues, you're seeing demographic shifts. If you ask very conservative millennials who say they're very conservative, they believe that we need to tackle climate change and that we need to truly be conservative in terms of conserving our environment.
Nevertheless, the League of Conservation Voters, which scores members of Congress on their environmental voting record, gave Stefanik a 43% in 2017 and a lifetime score of 27%. On other issues, Stefanik repeatedly mentioned to her audience that she voted against the GOP-led tax overhaul, claiming she was concerned about the repeal of state and local tax deductions and that she supported the doubling of the standard deduction and closing of loopholes included in the final bill. On guns, Stefanik said she supported a ban on bump stocks and the bipartisan Fix the Nicks bill, which seeks to strengthen the FBI's National Instant Criminal Background Check system for those purchasing firearms. But the Republican defended her endorsements and campaign contributions from the National Rifle Association. In the wake of recent high-profile mass shootings, her stance on gun laws drew both jeers and applause.
This district has a very large number of sportsmen, sportswomen too, and gun owners. I know that it sounds like we're going to disagree on this issue.
Stefanik, a member of the House Intelligence Committee, said she believes the panel's investigation into Russian interference with the 2016 election and the Trump campaign has become politicized. She also said she fully backs the Russia probe led by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. On the president himself, Stefanik, whose district stretches to the Canadian border, expressed reservations about Trump's announced tariffs placed on several countries, including China. In retaliation, China this week announced counter-tariffs on U.S. goods. Stefanik said she did not vote for Trump in the 2016 primaries. She voted for Ohio Governor John Kasich, but she did vote for the party's nominee in November.
I supported President Trump because I believed that in terms of issues that I care about, in terms of focusing on economic growth, on bringing back manufacturing jobs, on investing in our military, those were important issues in the face of this district.
But in the Me Too era, Trump's remarks about women remain in the minds of some voters. Stillwater resident Julie Wash, who said she was a sexual assault survivor, challenged Stefanik on supporting the president after the Access Hollywood tape, which included obscene remarks made by Trump in 2005.
So you will denigrate my integrity and the voices of so many people who have been sexually assaulted or abused so that your candidate can win the White House. Is that what you're saying?
No. I will never denigrate victims of sexual assault.
We do every day.
Walsh was referring to a photo of Stefanik standing next to a cardboard cutout of Trump with a thumbs up, snapped during a GOP fundraiser event in Saratoga County. Stefanik extended the one-hour town hall to 2 hours. She has another scheduled Friday in Moriah in Essex County. For more coverage of the 21st Congressional District, visit WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
The Westchester County Executive signed a measure this week on Equal Pay Day intended to help close the gender wage gap. The county's Board of Legislators unanimously approved the provision, and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says he's advancing similar legislation. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn with more.
Democratic Westchester County Executive George Latimer signed a law that bans businesses from asking about a job seeker's salary history in the application or during an interview.
It's 2018. It's time now for everybody to be treated, every job applicant to be treated equally.
That's Democratic County Legislator Catherine Borgia, the bill's primary sponsor. She says the legislation goes beyond closing the gender wage gap.
Anecdotally, we've heard a lot about older workers, that it really helps older workers as well, because for the opposite reason of sometimes they're getting priced out of a job market when they need a job after they've been let go from a higher paying job. So it really is something that just levels the playing field in a way that I just think it's a much cleaner transaction between employer and prospective employee. Everyone can negotiate to the best of their ability.
County Legislator Margaret Cunzio, a conservative, says it is important for such a provision to be replicated elsewhere.
It should be about fairness. It shouldn't be about gender. It shouldn't be about age. It shouldn't be about ethnicity. It should be strictly about qualifications, looking for the quality of the person for the job, and really looking for leveling the playing field. And if you're applying for a job, you really should be viewed at for fairness.
In fact, Governor Cuomo Tuesday advanced legislation to prohibit all employers, public and private, who do business in New York from asking prospective employees about their salary history and compensation. This was a chief recommendation from a State Department of Labor report entitled Closing the Gender Wage Gap in New York State. In New York, women earn the equivalent of 89 cents to each dollar earned by men, the narrowest wage gap of any state in the nation and higher than the national average of 80 cents. However, Black or African American women are paid the equivalent of 64 cents on the dollar, and Hispanic and Latina women are paid 55 cents on the dollar. Meanwhile, the Westchester legislators point to a study by the American Association of University Women in 2013 that found women get paid 6.6% less than men in their first jobs, and the inequity is perpetuated. Again, Cunzio.
And I did some investigative work based on my previous career, which was in education, looking at the leadership of school districts in Westchester County. And what we found was very interesting was that there were a lot more men in these positions. They make more money, and that includes the years of experience that they had. And it was eye-opening to me because when you go in a lot of times for an interview, a lot of times they will ask, well, what were you making? And they work from there, as opposed to having an open and fair, and it's really what we wanted was an open and fair playing field for someone to be able to interview and be hired based on their qualifications, not based on pigeonholed, their gender and saying, oh, well, because it's a male, female, we can offer X number or Y number of dollars.
Catherine Borgia.
Women start out their careers being paid a little bit less than men, and if every salary is based on the salary that came before, obviously that gap is going to grow exponentially for women and people of color. So it's an economic move. It helps everyone. It helps all of Westchester families.
On Monday, Latimer signed an executive order that prohibits the county from inquiring about past convictions during the initial application process. Latimer signed the Fair Chance to Work executive order at the Ossining headquarters of Hudson Link for Higher Education, an organization that provides college education, life skills, and reentry support to incarcerated and formerly incarcerated men and women. Borgia plans to introduce legislation to expand this order to all employees in Westchester, not just the county.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York's capital city of Albany, for the second year in a row, is receiving city aid after enduring a period of uncertainty before the final state budget deal came together. But as the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports, it's not the full amount of money Albany was seeking.
Albany is getting $12 million as part of the new state budget agreement. An assembly proposal would have given the city just $9.8 million, which likely would have resulted in dramatic cuts. Local leaders had lobbied for $12.5 million, saying the annual aid is needed to offset untaxed state properties in the city. Mayor Kathy Sheehan says her administration will deal with the $500,000 shortfall.
We've been able to see significant savings in past years when this funding either was not given to us at all or we were uncertain as to whether we were going to get it with position savings. So, not filling open positions, really taking a hard look at open positions as to whether we eliminate them entirely. We're also looking really hard at other resources that might be available for funding, whether that's grant funding that we can turn to. This will be a work in progress. We have to do this all year long, whether it's this $500,000 shortfall or, the unexpected failure of the closing for the Coiman's property to go through. That's another $620,000 shortfall. So we'll continue to work and do what we've been able to do throughout my administration, which is to deliver city services while seeking to balance the budget.
In 2017, Sheehan repeated her argument that several upstate cities receive much more money than Albany does.
Our AIM funding per capita, that's aid that comes to municipalities, is a quarter of what Buffalo and Rochester receive, or Syracuse receive. It's a third of what Rochester receives. It's almost a third of what Niagara Falls receives, and it's half of what Utica and Troy receive per capita. We are not being treated like any other large city in upstate New York. Of the cities that are ranked by the State Comptroller's Office of being in fiscal distress, we are the only city in the state of our size that is in significant fiscal distress.
The Democrat noted homeowners and residents throughout 25 unique neighborhoods bear a disproportionate burden of Albany's tax levy. Governor Andrew Cuomo's budget division has its own perspective regarding Albany's fiscal situation. Spokesman Morris Peters.
The state paid for a consultant to do a deep dive into ways the city of Albany can close their budget gap, and consistent with the recommendations, the state gave Albany a special $12.5 million last year. The report determined that they'd need $9.8 million this year if they implemented savings recommendations, but still the city requested another $12.5 million. So the new state budget strikes a balance by making $12 million available if needed, while ensuring that Albany pursues those efficiencies. Last year, state money helped Albany achieve a surprise $6 million surplus, and that's not fair to state taxpayers.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1815. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.